In the news this week, there have been several things that have come to my attention anyway. And particularly today, or in the last couple of days, there's something that came up and I heard about which really didn't seem to make an awful lot of sense. And that is that OPEC has decided to cut production. And it's cutting production to try and keep the oil price high. Now, I thought, well, you look at all the other news items that I've been reading, it's been talking about oil being in short supply, and that China is putting an awful lot of pressure on oil and they cannot keep up with the demand. The tankers and everything else they're having to try and build to order to keep up with the demand. And they just this particular decision by OPEC just simply didn't seem to make much sense. In the Financial Times today, there is an article here, and it says that OPEC's decision yesterday to cut overproduction demonstrates the world's biggest oil cartel will defend oil prices that are well above its official price range. And this really is something that has happened. It actually defending a price, but it's well above what they would have actually said. So ministers of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries said that they would cut excess output, which is estimated at 1 million barrels a day, above the official quota of 27 million barrels a day, with the change coming into effect from January the 1st. They plan to hold another meeting on January the 30th, and Ahmed Farid Al-Ahmed Al-Sabah, the oil minister of Kuwait, said that they might then discuss the prospect of 1 million barrel cut in the production ceiling at the start of the second quarter as well. So they're determined to try and force the price up rather than down. He says the latest move has two main consequences that consumers can expect oil. First of all, that consumers can expect oil prices to remain well above the price of the low $20 range seen throughout most of the 1990s. And the price at which OPEC is ready to defend is well above the long-term price of $20 to $25 used by international oil companies to evaluate potential oil field development. With the US benchmark, crude futures, the West Texas Intermediate trading above $40 a barrel since July, a decision, so you know they're defending something between $20 and $25. And in fact, the oil futures, the oil price at the moment is above $40 a barrel. And yet they're trying to keep the price, push the price up. It doesn't make sense. It says, trading was above $40 a barrel since July. A decision to trim production at this price level a year ago would have been inconceivable. In the past 21 years, the WTI, that's the West Texas Intermediate trading level, has only traveled above this $40 level at times of war, the lead up to the Gulf War in 1990 and the Iraq War last year. It's the only time they ever went up above $40 a barrel. Now, a $40 price looks familiar. Demand has grown at its fastest pace in 28 years, fueled by ever-increasing demands in China and India. So this, again, is putting in the picture, the information that I had, which really doesn't make sense as to what OPEC is doing. It says this year's uptake in demand has caught the entire oil supply chain by surprise, forcing oil tanker rates to rise to record levels in normal terms because of the lack of tanker availability. So there is an oil shortage, and yet they're exacerbating that oil shortage, forcing the price up over the $40 a barrel mark. The increase has also created bottlenecks in this global refinery industry following two decades of overcapacity and lean margins. Both of these factors have contributed to the $10 rise in oil price this year above the 2003 average. It's also swallowed up most of the spare production capacity OPEC had carried for the last 25 years. So, again, you say, well, why is this problem? What is the problem? And at the end of this article, it says the dollar has declined by 30%. There's your problem. It's declined by 30%, and this has affected the real amount that we receive for our oil, said Bajan Namdia Zangena, the Ministry of Petroleum for Iran. Mr. Zangena said that a new floor for the OPEC price target should be about $32 a barrel, a figure with which many of his counterparts are in agreement. Analysts said that if OPEC ministers no longer considered the current price band relevant, it was only a matter of time before the cartel officially endorsed a higher price band and said goodbye to all oil prices in the $20 range. So it is the fact that The dollar itself has been changing. And there's more to it than that. What in fact is going on is geopolitically significant as well, as to what in fact is happening between the oil producing countries, the war that's been going on in Iraq. And the fact is that Ms. Munro was talking to me just before we started, the fact that Iraq was beginning to price its oil in euros, not in dollars, was part of the deciding factors that in fact started the war. Because if you start pricing the oil in another currency, then what in fact happens is that all the oil, the petrodollars that are out there, will start going home to roost, and which will force the entire economy of America down. Now, this particular article is from Al Jazeera, that I'm just about to read to you. Now, Al Jazeera is the one where is this Arabic newspaper that, you know, broadcasts all this stuff from Osama bin Laden and all the Arabic view of the world. It's not so much, it's not a terrorist organization by any means, it's just simply giving an Arabic view of the world. This particular article was written by one of their journalists, one of their senior journalists. He's an associate editor of the Wall Street Journal, apparently, this Jude Waninsky. And he's an expert on supply-side economics as well. But it was written on 20th of October this year. And it says, before the US abandoned the gold standard on the 15th of August 1971, there'd been a traditional relationship between gold and oil. One source could be exchanged for one ounce of gold, that is, could be exchanged for 15 barrels. So there was your relationship. Oil and gold, oil and the dollar, oil and gold were tied together. And of course, because the dollar was tied to gold, then the dollar petroleum price was meaningful. And he says, the relationship had held steady for decades as the US fixed the dollar price of gold at $35 an ounce. And the world oil price fluctuated narrowly around the $2.50 a barrel mark. Since 1971, the gold-oil relationship began to vary as the US dollar floated on international currency exchanges. But until recently, it still moved around that 1 to 15 ratio. Now, an ounce of gold at $420 an ounce when this essay was written, and it's higher than that I believe now, buys only 8 barrels of oil. So for decades it's been fixed at 15 to 1 ounce, now it's only 8 barrels to 1 ounce. It says it's buying 8 barrels of oil at $52 a barrel. Around the world, industrial and financial analysts are puzzled over why this has happened. And I won't read it all, but I'll just read his conclusion in the article here. And it says, oil is, of course, the most important commodity in the world. For the world oil industry to stop investing in its development, which is what in fact happened, because the oil in dollar terms started dropping lower, and it therefore didn't invest in its development, for almost 3 years was a shocking lapse. It was caused not by the industry, but by the intellectual failures of the United States that led former President Nixon to abandon the gold standard, and along with it the precious signals that that standard supplied in guiding capital investment to where mankind needed it most, i.e. into oil. So that the decoupling of gold, something tangible for dollars, and allowing the dollar to float, suddenly put the dollar into a position where it was no longer valid as a petro currency. And he concludes, it says, why is the price of oil so high? It's because the US dollar is floating, free of gold or any commodity anchor. As long as it is, the entire world will be forced to somehow accommodate this wholly unnecessary volatility in energy supply and in price. Now that's, again, we're living in a time that is very, very volatile. That is, we cannot see the future very easily, and neither can politicians or anybody else. And therefore, this is just one more stage in that process. It's one more stage in something which is uncertain and looking into the future in an uncertain way. Now, there's not only oil that is linked in this way. There's an article here from the New York Times regarding, and it's coming from Tokyo. It says, as Americans embark on another season of debt-supported holiday spending, they may want to give thanks to that Masatsugu Asakawa, that he is still buying in America too. Now, I'd never heard of this chap, this Asakawa, I think his name is, that's how it's pronounced. Mr. Asakawa, 46, is the top official at the finance ministry, here responsible for managing the largest portfolio of United States government securities in the world, worth a staggering $720 billion. That's a phenomenal amount of money. As the dollar has slumped this fall, many investors have started to worry that Mr. Asakawa and his counterparts elsewhere in Asia will be tempted to pare their holdings, perhaps causing the currency to plunge much further and setting off a round of interest rate increases in the United States that could send the global economy into a tailspin. But Mr. Asakawa, at least for now, says that he intends to keep right on adding American holdings to Tokyo's portfolio. We've heard the rumors in the last few days that the Chinese guys, the Indian guys, the South African guys are diverting from dollars, Mr. Asakawa said. We have no plan at all to divert from our dollar denominational assets. Still, Mr. Asakawa admits that he's not been sleeping too well lately. Now, that is probably an understating. He says, this thing wakes me up. It's terrible, Mr. Asakawa said in excellent American accent in English. He once studied at Princeton. And as he toyed with a blue patch, he goes on about it. He says, fortunately, he says, my wife is very understanding. But this is a real problem. And it's not, so you've got goods that are flowing into the country, being paid for in dollars, not just oil, but goods, in other words, coming from China particularly, because you know, the electronics base seems to be in China these days. Also Japan, and all that area of Asia. Now, people are getting jittery and becoming more and more jittery, and this is the reason, you know, here we can see this just on the surface with OPEC and what's happening there with OPEC. Now, there's this article, and I'm not sure how, you know, what Newsmax.com is, I'm not quite sure, but there's an article here dated December the 7th, which says OPEC dumps the dollar. Now, whether in fact it's fully dumped it is or not is another matter. But it says, quietly but with malice, OPEC cartel nations have been dumping the US dollar over the past 3 years, according to the Bank for International Settlements. The dollar has been falling dramatically in recent years, reaching new lows against the euro and other currencies. One key culprit may be the OPEC states, who have traditionally denominated their transactions in the US dollar, but are now moving to the euro in what the Bank for International Settlements says is a subtle but a noticeable shift. And it says the dollar deposits have actually reduced from 75% in the third quarter of 2001 to 61% today, a fall of some 13 percentage points. Now, it's not total by any means, but the move and the trend and the direction is quite clear. Now, as I say, the indication is that America went to war partly due to this problem that Iraq was starting to have the euro as its currency of exchange for the dollars, for the oil, instead of the dollar, and this is this would in fact put enormous pressure on the dollar and the position that America is in at the moment, because financially it has far, far more dollars out than it can possibly support. And so if they all come back to roost, the price of the dollar falls, the price of all the savings that people in America have disappears, and you have recession, basically. Part of what has been, again, on my mind is a program that I saw on Thursday evening. I don't know how many within the UK actually saw this on BBC Two. It was a drama documentary entitled The Man Who Broke Britain. And it was interesting in what, in fact, the story. It was fictitious completely. When I say completely, not completely, but it was a fictitious account of something that could happen. And if I read you what in fact it said in the paper, it says it's about a global financial meltdown in January 2005, cued by the discovery that a London trader had left his investment bank hugely reliant on the oil industry, exposed just as a terrorist attack on a Saudi refinery destabilizes oil markets. In other words, you get a terrorist attack over in Saudi Arabia at the same time as this, what they initially, you know, within this drama documentary, they thought initially was a terrorist attack at the actual foundation of the financial system as well. So you're getting a double whammy. Now, you're looking at Saudi and the way in which Saudi has got enormous numbers of petrodollars at the moment and the investments that have been made there. You can see their hand in the markets to a large degree. All you need is some kind of link up between the two, and the situation that was being talked about here becomes very real indeed. It says the filmmakers have much of interest to say about how the city operates, the impotence of government in the face of global share dive, the spectre of attacks on our financial institutions rather than their symbols. Now the two towers, the twin towers, were just symbols, and they attacked the two twin towers and the symbols came down. But here what they're saying is they're attacking the actual foundations of the banks themselves. Now, I can't remember what they actually what did they say the name of the bank was. They had certain Sun First Credit Bank, that's SFCB, and they had a logo beside the SFCB, and it did not take a brain of any intelligence at all to put the initials HSBC and the HSBC logo right alongside it. That's clearly who they were identifying within the documentary, but the FSCB was the actual initials being used against the with this logo which looked very, very similar to HSBC. Now, HSBC, as I understand it, is the largest bank in the world, and it has already been hit by terrorist attack a number of times. But as this thing was bringing out, it's attack on our financial institutions rather than just the symbols, and the potential dangers of the derivatives market. Is this the best way to approach such material? Probably not, but it is effective. So that particular, it's fictitious account, yes, but it highlighted a number of problems. And the interesting thing was that at the end of the film you saw a group of pensioners demonstrating, you saw a certain amount of problems within the country, but relatively nothing, and they dismissed the actual attack. It wasn't an attack at all, it was just the fact that somebody was trying to get a lower rate of insurance and therefore boost their profits. That was the way in which the fact it ended. But the issues being brought out at the beginning, the first half of that drama documentary, was very profound, and they indicated the vulnerability that was there, and it was gave the indication that it just took an attack, a coordinated attack within the financial markets and also on the outside infrastructure of the oil industry. As one of the actors playing one of the cabinet posts said that people think that money makes the world go round. It doesn't. Energy makes the world go round, our modern world. You know, that is a tangible, that is a real. So if you tack the energy at its source, and then at the same time you also attack the financial base as well at its source, that could, again, we've got to be aware of this, that could bring the whole system down and trigger a different type of world than what we've got today. And it is all confidence. Another very interesting, this is a true documentary that we saw, this is last Monday, which was called The Curse of Oil, The Pipeline. And this, I don't know whether you actually saw one nodding head there, but this particular documentary, what it did is it went to Azerbaijan, and then they followed the route of the pipeline that was is now being laid from Azerbaijan for thousands of miles through Azerbaijan up into the Georgia, that's right, up into Georgia, down skirting the Kurdish areas of Turkey, and then finally ending up on the Mediterranean coast. And it was showing as they travelled through this area, the camera work was awful. But apart from that, they were showing the route that was being taken, how they were trying to sidestep the problems, the problem areas. So there was an automatic route that they would have taken that they simply can't take because of the political situation. They were steering into Georgia because it's non-Muslim, and they're going skirting around the Kurdish areas because of the tensions there. But it was also showing that they're burying every single mile of this pipeline because of terrorist danger, and they're hoping that everything grows back, nobody will remember quite where this thing is. It'll be shipping something like $1 million an hour, was it? Something like that in oil. And it starts next year in 2005. But it also has pumping stations throughout its length, and these things are open for terrorist attack. And you know, it's a prime target, and it was just showing that, you know, the chances that it will get away without a terrorist attack is almost nil. I mean, it is something. It's an area that is open for terrorist attack. Another one from last Monday is, it says, power cut alarm over the Ukraine crisis. Europe may face a Christmas of power cuts and even higher energy prices if the Ukrainian election crisis hits the country's key gas pipeline from Russia, and analysts have warned. Now, the Russians export gas rather than oil, and they export oil as well, but it's gas primarily, and its gas pipeline goes across into Europe. And it goes through the Ukraine. It says, this is a completely unprecedented situation, said Patrick Heron, a gas expert, Heron Energy. You have a potential revolution in a gas transit country. There is possibility that someone could turn off the taps. It says the warning is particularly chilling because the UK will become dependent on imported gas within 2 years as the North Sea's output declines. So again, that is bubbling and boiling all the time. And as I said, what we're looking at is this problem within America, that the American dollar has, while it was linked to the gold standard, gave that stability there. Now that it's been uncoupled from the gold standard, people are getting very, very skittish about that. You throw in terrorism, you throw in this problem within the Ukraine, and this problem that's actually happening in the Ukraine is also very interesting. The article in today's paper, you've got a picture of Yushchenko, who was the opposition leader. And if you look at these two pictures, the one, this was, I think, earlier this year, and this one here is at the moment, his face is a mass of these boils, of these, you just completely, you look haggard and completely changed in his face, literally in a matter of months. And the reason is, as far as I can gather, is he was poisoned. And it looks as if, you say, who was involved with it? Well, Russia's name springs to mind, and they really do not want that particular individual in that particular position, because he is pro-Western. And if you look at these reports, the television reports, again, you don't see it all on the surface. You don't see it even when you read the articles necessarily, but you look at the reports that come through the television screens, and what do you see? You see them carrying Virgin Marys around in the crowds, and you know, huge Virgin Mary being carried around in the crowds. You see Lech Wałęsa addressing the crowds. You see the Catholic Church, or the Catholic Church's hand, very firmly within that process. And Yushchenko himself, when he went and took the office or whatever, he made the sign of the cross and gave very clear indication of his religious affiliations. And it's a very similar position in many ways, maybe not quite as blatant as we saw in Poland. So you've got all this kind of moving at the same time. Another one coming from December the 7th, that's Tuesday. It says, Europe urges the US to halt the dollar's slide. It says, the dollar fell against the pound and the euro yesterday, prompting calls for intervention to support the dollar from several European finance ministers. The dollar fell to $1.94 against sterling and to $1.34 against the euro. Herve Guémard, the French finance minister, said currency market intervention was necessary, not just from Europe, but also from the American and Asian authorities. Now, we've just read an article about the Asian authorities doing that. But there is a limit to how much they can do, how much they can actually intervene in that way. But it means that they are going to reduce the standard of living within America. And when you do that, then obviously you don't get re-elected. That's the problem. We just turn over to Amos chapter 8. Amos chapter 8. Just a few scriptures just before we finish the news section. But here in Amos chapter 8, it says, verse 1, it says, "Thus says the Lord Eternal, showed to me, and behold, a basket of summer fruit." And he said, "Amos, what do you see?" And he said, "A basket of summer fruit." He said, "The Eternal to me, the end is come upon my people of Israel. I will not again pass by them any more. And the songs of the temple shall be howling in that day," said the Lord Eternal. "There shall be many dead bodies in every place. They shall cast them forth with silence." So there's a problem coming within the very house of Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh. "Hear this, O you that swallow up the needy, even to make the poor of the land to fail." Now, what do the poor of the land put their trust in? Well, the greenback, the dollar. They put their money into a bank account or whatever, and they expect it to stay there. Just saying, "When will the new moon be gone that we may sell corn?" In other words, "Won't we go ahead and just get on with our life and just get on to another month, more profit, and grab more for ourselves? And the Sabbath that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small," and notice, as far as any Sabbath, even just looking at the Sunday trading or whatever, they're getting rid of that and getting rid of all of that side of things. It says, "But making the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsifying the balance by deceit." Now this is condemned by God. And it says that we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of shoes, yes, and sell the refuse of the wheat. In other words, we'll go ahead and we'll just get whatever we possibly can, and there isn't the justice that's there. Let's just turn over one more scripture finally, just before we close. Deuteronomy 25. This is part of the laws of God that are being broken at this present time within our land. And as it was brought out by Al Jazeera, the problem is the policy of the government in uncoupling from the gold standard, allowing it to float free and not be giving anything of security behind it. And it says here in Deuteronomy 25, verse 13, it says, "You will not have in your bag different weights, a great and a small." There's got to be a stability of the currency, of the weight that you give. "You will not have in your house different measures, a great and small, but you will have a perfect and just weight, a perfect just measure. Then shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you. For all that do such things, all that do unrighteously, are an abomination to the Eternal your God." Now the government is trying to get money out of the general population without going ahead and giving the impression that that is the case. And the way they do that is by making the actual currency worth less. We've seen it in the 70s with the galloping inflation that we had then. But today the dollar is going down because there isn't anything really behind it. There's nothing behind it. And they're overspending, and it's bringing that price down. So it is something that we need to be aware of. It's something that other nations can see as well. And geopolitically, it has profound implications, because geopolitically, we're looking at a shift away from the dollar into the euro. And as that happens more, then the pressure on the dollar is becoming greater and greater, and will actually bring down the very economy of the United States. So it has the potential to bring down the economy of the United States. So that is something that we need to be aware of, and something we need to be watching very closely.